It's time to get serious. Time for Radio X. Radio X. Your host, Jimmy X.
Well, hello there, everyone, and welcome to another live edition of Radio X here on the one and only Oracle Broadcasting Network. I am your host, Jimmy X. Thank you so much for tuning in this afternoon. And I want to go on record for those of you who tuned in last Sunday and heard a rebroadcast. Well, you know, sometimes things come up and there are things to do, so I apologize for the rebroadcast, but we are, in fact, live. Today is Sunday, October 11th, 2009. And of course, I want to encourage you to join us in the Radio X chat room throughout the next 2 hours of this broadcast. You can do that by right there on the front page at oraclebroadcasting.com. Just find the chat room link, click on that, and you'll find Radio X at the bottom of the page. Also, a big shout out to all of you listening on our AM and FM affiliates around the country, including right here on our flagship station, Micro 1650 AM. Again, welcome to the broadcast. Well, folks, on the show today, we're going to revisit what happened on September 11th, 2001. And yeah, I know, we've heard many theories over the years regarding the collapse of the World Trade Center buildings. Of course, most notably, the so-called conspiracy theory that seems to be in the forefront is controlled demolition. But perhaps you haven't heard the theory espoused by Dr. Judy Wood. Dr. Wood suggests that, nope, it was not controlled demolition. It was a directed energy weapon. And it's a theory that I think is worth taking into account. We're going to get all the details on that today as we welcome Dr. Judy Wood to the broadcast this afternoon. Dr. Wood, thank you so much for coming on the broadcast today.
Well, thank you very much for having me.
Well, I find this is a very interesting theory, and of course, we're going to get in depth with respect to all that's encompassed here within this, with what you have to say. I find it fascinating that when you really start looking at the pictures and you watch the videos, and I've been at your website 100 times, and by the way, her website is drjudy.com, that's D-R.
No,
Judy.
DrJudyWood.com.
I'm sorry. I have it right in front of me, too, Doctor. Apparently, I'm not doing well at reading today. It's DrJudyWood.com, DrJudyWood.com. And check it out for yourself, folks. Plenty of information there. In fact, more than I could actually take in even 5 or 6 sittings. So what we're going to do today is dissect that. And before we delve in, as you know, Dr. Wood, we have a short segment here. Why don't we start out with a little background? Now, you have a PhD in materials engineering science, is that correct?
Yes. That's an interdisciplinary degree. My master's degree is in engineering mechanics, and my PhD is really in engineering mechanics, but with a focus on solid mechanics and looking at materials.
Mm-hmm. So you
materials characterization.
Right, so you have a good understanding of the materials involved in the buildings, for example, and the surrounding vehicles and that. On September 11th.
Yes, and my bachelor's degree is in civil engineering.
Oh,
engineering,
okay.
Structures.
Right, so engineering structures. So did you do any work in that field? I mean, were you involved in an actual building?
Not building buildings, but design and building other things. I worked at NASA and also at Boeing.
Oh, really? For how many years?
Not very long, just between degrees.
Okay, and are you, at this point, are you teaching or are you...
Not anymore.
Okay. Where were you teaching?
You don't research 9/11 and have a job in the public arena.
Okay, I see. So you're saying there's maybe a conflict of interest there.
Yeah, it's a difficult situation.
Well, it's a difficult situation based solely on the fact that you are offering an alternative theory. I like to call them alternative theories as opposed to conspiracy theories, because obviously, once the word conspiracy is placed there, it appears that everyone who thinks outside the box, of course, is a screwball. So we're going to tackle...
More importantly, this is not conspiracy.
Yeah, of course it's not. All right, well, folks, stay tuned. Some fascinating radio on the way. My guest, Dr. Judy Wood, is going to be talking about her theories concerning what happened on 9/11. Back in 3 minutes with more Radio X here on the Oracle Broadcasting Network. Stay with us. All right. And we are back here on Radio X on the Oracle Broadcasting Network, coming to you live Sunday, October 11, 2009. I am your host, Jimmy X. Joining me, my guest, Dr. Judy Wood, who is going to be talking about what she believes was a directed energy weapon that took down the buildings on September 11, 2001. And, Doctor, before we actually get into the meat and potatoes of the program here, I brought up just before the break, for those that missed, that, of course, we know that the United States government has insisted over the years that their findings were accurate. Their one and only theory is that the impact of the planes alone brought the buildings down. And, of course, we know the mainstream media have reported exactly that. And they're using an oddball logic with those of us who dare to think anything else. And that is that they're claiming that since they all put forth the same story, that there really is no reason to consider anything else, because obviously all of the mainstream media outlets have the exact same story. Obviously, you find that to be a load of bunk, no?
Well, for one thing, no one, as far as I know, besides myself, has investigated what happened that day. Isn't that shocking?
Mm-hmm. That is. Well, of course it is. That's been one of the points of contention with some of us who are looking for what really happened all along, right?
Did you know that, you know, maybe you'd be surprised to learn that NIST, the National Institute of Standards and Technology, did not analyze the collapse, even though they were paid to do so with our tax money.
So what exactly did they analyze?
Hypothetical possibilities.
Mm-hmm.
They even told me in writing, because I was trying to hold them accountable for the fact that their explanation violates the, you know, laws of conservation of momentum, conservation of energy. And they said, oh, no, it doesn't, because we didn't analyze the collapse. We only analyzed events before the collapse. So the building obeyed the laws of physics while it was still standing. They didn't have to address anything else.
Well, that doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
Right. They had 10,000 pages of stuff that appeared to be an analysis.
Well, the funny thing is that the National Institute of Standards can't even keep my computer clock straight when it's daylight savings time. So I guess that's another story. But, you know, the fact is that the media, of course, has played right along. And I guess the point of contention with you specifically is that this has constantly been called conspiracy on the part of anyone who doesn't see it the way NIST and the federal government told us was the case.
Yeah, another bone I have to pick is the folks who call it an inside job. That is a conclusion about who done it. In order to conclude who did it, you first, step number one, is to determine what happened, and then how it happened, and then who done it. Yet before noon on 9/11, we were told who done it and how, before any kind of forensic investigation had determined even what happened. That was a shocker.
Absolutely, that was a shocker. I was watching the coverage, and I would assume that you were as well. You know, was it right then and there that that set off the alarm bells with you? Just that alone, or did you really have to kind of go back and really research some of this before you started to develop the theory about something other than, say, controlled demolition or simply the planes alone?
Well, I never really developed a theory to begin with, but what set off the alarm bells, and I had to, you know, retroactively figure out what it was, because it was something that just wasn't right. And I think what I determined it was is I taught a late class on Tuesdays, graduate class in the evenings. And I, you know, I just like to stay up late, so I'm a late getter-upper. So I have an alarm that goes off just to make sure I'm up by a certain time. I was already up then, but the alarm kicked on. It, in the other room, it's a radio alarm with some obnoxious talk show. I didn't want to get up and shut it off, and so I'm hearing this yapping in the background about, oh, he probably had too much to drink last night, made a wrong turn, ran into the building, ha, ha, ha. And it went on and on, and like, when are they going to get to the punchline? Hmm. Yeah, I thought it was some sick joke they're telling. And then, you know, after, okay, they had another plane or something. Finally, I went and turned the TV set on, and, yeah, there was something happening there. And then I changed channels. I have rabbit ears. Every channel was playing the same tune.
That's right.
That was it. That's what got me. Usually you'd have some reporter with a microphone up close and personal with a loved one who, you know, lost somebody in the tower or lost somebody at the airport or talking about airplane design or talking about flight school. You'd have a whole bunch of different things going on. But we had the same perspective on every single station.
Exactly the same perspective, because that's what I was doing too. I was I actually was up early that morning, and I caught the very beginning of it on the radio, and then we turned on the TV and started to look around, and yes, I agree with you. Every single news outlet was saying exactly the same thing.
It was amazing, and that there's just something just didn't feel right there. It wasn't normal, and then no ads. So I need more data. Need more evidence. I'm one who likes to collect data. Of course, I was recording whatever was on the network station. And so I called my mother, who lives right near the Pentagon, because I figured, okay, if this was for real, then she could look outside and see fighter jets overhead, right?
One would think.
So she looked out. She didn't know anything was happening so until I called her, and she looked out. Nope, she didn't see any fighter jets overhead. So she was skeptical about anything going on. And I think there's a lot to do with how you're introduced to this. Meanwhile, my dad was out in his garden, and his next-door neighbor who worked at the Pentagon came running over, you know, to tell him what a horrible thing she'd just been through, and it traumatized my dad. So that was how he was introduced to it. He was in shock and so forth, and my mom and I were, you know, okay, is this another Orson Welles War of the Worlds? You know, we were skeptical from the start and stayed that way.
Right.
And I went into campus, and, you know, sitting in the faculty conference room watching these replays over and over again of the building unraveling like a sweater, I about broke out laughing, like, nobody in here is going to swallow this. You know, this is ridiculous. They looked at me like I was a nutcase.
Okay, so you're saying your colleagues, though, inevitably did swallow what they were watching.
Not inevitably, immediately.
Immediately, okay.
Yeah, they were just getting sucked into it, and I felt like I was in the Twilight Zone. And, you know, I'm trying to point and say, this is ridiculous. And they looked at me like I was just so out of line. It was horrible. I was as though I was having a birthday party at a funeral or something.
Hmm.
And I felt really uncomfortable. So I went up to my office. I was thinking, well, how would a building collapse? It doesn't unravel like a sweater. And I'm thinking, and then I start going through some calculations. And I'm like, wait, it should take longer for it to go away than just a few seconds. Yeah, I went down and watched it. Okay, maybe I remembered the coefficient of gravity incorrectly.
Wow. Well, that would be quite a mistake on your part. Hold that thought for just a moment,
okay.
Doctor. We have to go to a break. We'll be back with more Radio X in just 3 minutes. My guest, Dr. Judy Wood. Check out our website, drjudywood.com, drjudywood.com. More to come, folks. Stay tuned. All right, folks, welcome back to Radio X. We're on the Oracle Broadcasting Network. I am your host, Jimmy X. My guest on the show today, Dr. Judy Wood. And we're talking about directed energy weapons on 9/11. We're going to get into more of the details concerning what that all entails, the mechanics and, I suppose, the physics involved in that in just a bit. But before the break, Doctor, you were talking about watching some of the coverage on the morning of 9/11, and you were on campus with your colleagues. You said they immediately bought into whatever it was the media was saying was happening with the collapse of the buildings, and you started to question your own calculations. I mean, obviously that was a facetious point, but what stood out there with respect to what you were seeing as opposed to what you were being told?
When my eyes and ears don't agree, I tend to turn off my ears and just look. And so I didn't really hear much of what was going on. And that may be why I didn't get sucked into it. It was a pretty serious psyops going on. And I could see it, and it made me feel like, what's the disconnect between me and everyone else? And I did my own sanity checks. Is it me or is it them? And I actually got out 4 different physics books off my shelf to check to see if it was a typo that I'd memorized incorrectly about the coefficient of gravity. Like, what? Something that didn't make sense.
And you're talking concerning the coefficient of gravity as opposed to what you're saying is how fast those buildings came down.
Or how fast they went away.
How fast they went away, which they did. They actually literally went away.
Yeah. A quarter-mile-tall buildings go away, blow away in the wind.
Right. Now, you talk about this would be what, the rate of destruction. And on your website, you use a billiard ball model to kind of show how quickly that ball would fall to the ground. I'm assuming you're talking in a vacuum, right? You're saying no wind resistance.
Right. And the billiard ball example is sort of a mental exercise, and mm-hmm. that is where I first thought of it that day, trying to come up with a quick number of what would be reasonable, and I picked two different, you know, extremes. One is, you know, every floor, one is every 10 floors, like there's a whole lot of damage, of just what the minimum time you'd expect, and somewhere between 30 seconds and 100 seconds, not 10 seconds.
Right. You claim now the billiard ball dropped to Earth in approximately 10 seconds?
That's a billiard ball is just, you know, one drop.
Right.
But in order to get that much material pancaking down, you know, here's a good test.
Okay.
How many times in 10 seconds can you clap your hands?
Well, I've never tried that experiment. Maybe during the break I'll give it a shot and I'll let you know. But
if you have 110 stories pancaking down, it's going to take a long time.
Right.
It's not going to take 10 seconds.
Now, how long did you say it took for the buildings to come down?
I've never stated how long it took.
Oh, okay. Do you know how long it took?
I'm stating what the official numbers are.
And
whether it's the NIST report or the FEMA report or the seismology data,
okay. The
seismograph for the North Tower, the ground only shook for 8 seconds.
Right.
8 seconds. And it takes 9.5 seconds to drop a bowling ball off the roof and have it hit the pavement.
And we're talking about gigantic buildings that fell to Earth in what obviously would be record time.
Yeah, it turns out they didn't fall to the Earth. It blew away in the wind. The ground shook for 8 seconds. It didn't mean the building all in on the ground in 8 seconds. You know, dust doesn't make a thud when it hits, and it doesn't hit right away. It floats away and lands someplace downstream.
Right. Well, obviously, you don't espouse the controlled demolition theory, which a lot of people do. They claim that they see charges going off as the buildings are coming down. I'm sure you've seen that video yourself. Can you explain what that appears to be to you?
The squirts coming out of the sides.
Yes.
Well, if you have building, pancaking down, you would have much stronger squirts coming out the side.
Okay.
Much stronger squirts. I went through some calculations as to, you know, these floors pancaking down at that rate. To get it in pancaking down to the ground and piling up like pancakes in, even 10 seconds, halfway down, the building is squirting out air at greater than Mach 1. And Mach 2, by the time it hits, you know, reaches the ground. So all the adjacent buildings in the neighborhood should look sandblasted with all this stuff squirting out.
And
that's a tremendous volume of air in that building, much less desks and everything else. If we just assume there's nothing in there but a hollow building, you have air that needs to come out. And, a little squirt here and there. Why didn't we see more of those squirts? That's a bigger question. That's my biggest issue with Building 7 is it didn't even spill across the street. And across the street was the postal building. It didn't even get a scratch on it.
Hmm.
So how do you have 47 stories, you know, go down to the ground without squirting out any air across the street? No spillage.
Right.
So, just because you see something squish out of a building doesn't mean that it's a bomb. Just like you hear a bang in your microwave oven doesn't mean that's a bomb. It's a raw egg. You put it in your microwave, it'll explode.
It'll explode. That's correct. So
there's different things that you know, make bangs. There's different things that squirt air out.
Okay, well, so we need to talk about this more then. Okay, so you're saying you think it had something to do with the directed energy weapon. What exactly?
You're jumping to the conclusion.
Okay, well, then you tell me, because that's why you're on the show.
I think it's important that if you look at all the evidence, that mm-hmm. and as I say, you listen to the data carefully enough, it'll tell you exactly what happened. And that's what I've done. You don't force it anywhere. You don't say, eeny, meeny, miny, moe, I know about firecrackers, BB guns, and thermite. Let's pick one of those, because I don't know of anything else.
Okay.
You're bound to mess up.
Right.
It's like taking a multiple choice test where you don't have any of the right choices to pick from. And I did not know that energy weapons existed until I started looking at this. But the data told me they did. I, incidentally, my area of expertise is in an analogous field, optical interferometry. And from that, I could see interference of a different kind of energy than visible light. It had all the hallmarks of it. And everything kind of concluded from there. But all the different phenomena I listed, and just kept looking at them and looking at them until it became just so abundantly clear. For example, I call them wheat checks, those prefab columns, sections are three columns wide and three stories tall. That's how the buildings are built, a whole bunch of those.
Right. Mm-hmm.
They look like wheat checks, so I call them wheat checks. So here you have a wheat check flying through the air, and it never hits the ground. It looks like it's melting like ice cream with trailing dust. And not only that, I bet you it's dropping at a faster rate than free fall of gravity.
Well, how can that be?
If it's being propelled.
Oh, as it's being propelled. Gotcha. Okay. Thought I missed
if
something.
This is like, mm-hmm. Think of it as though this dust squirting out the back is like solid rocket fuel.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it just as a as an analogy to visualize what could happen.
Right. So, I mean, are you suggesting that this is some sort of high intensity electronic mass or something? Is it acoustic energy? What do you think this is or was?
Well, as I got all these things together, like the toasted cars, we've probably heard a lot about all over Manhattan. There was like 1,400 cars where there was enough left to count them as a vehicle. There's other ones where there's nothing left. Just cars half there and half disintegrated, as much as a half mile away
right.
from the Trade Center.
All right, doctor, hold that thought for a moment, okay? We have to take the bottom of the hour break. We'll be back with more Radio X. Dr. Judy Wood, my guest on the program today, and we'll open up the phone lines in a bit if you'd like to chime in. Give you the numbers when we get back. Stay tuned,
Radio
folks. And we're back here on Radio X on the Oracle Broadcasting Network. Jimmy X, your host. My guest, Dr. Judy Wood. Check out her website, drjudywood.com, drjudywood.com. We're talking about what she believes took down the buildings on 9/11, September 11th, 2001. And before the break, Doctor, we were talking a little about what your theory is concerning what kind of energy you think this might have been to bring these buildings down. I asked the question whether you believed it might have been acoustic or not. So why don't we pick it up there? Tell us what you think had to have occurred or most likely occurred in your view.
Again, the data tells you what the answer is. We have coarse dust that lands. You see a clear blue sky, and then pretty soon that dust is frothing up from the pavement. The coarse dust continued breaking down once it landed. It's an ongoing process. There's other weird things like round holes in windows. Perfectly round holes, no other breakage in the window, like somebody took a glass cutter. And it could be a double pane window where only the outside pane has a round hole in it, and the inside one is still intact. That needs explaining.
Uh-huh.
One thing that does that, longitudinal waves of energy.
Okay, and again, is that acoustic energy? I mean, do you have an idea? I mean, obviously, whatever this energy is, had to have, like, for example, put holes in the windows. Only the outside windows, as I've seen on your website, and I've looked at those pictures very carefully. Is it an acoustic charge?
It's radio frequency, microwave, and static fields interfering with each other.
And I would assume these would have to be very powerful.
Not necessarily.
No, they don't have to be. Why is that?
Well, after I got this vast list of phenomena, I just kept looking at the data until the data was going to speak to me. And one of the key moments was looking at that tipping top of the South Tower. And there's been all this discussion about molten metal, which, you know, I've yet to see any evidence of it. There's only evidence to the contrary. But, you know, like you put water on molten metal and you get steam explosion.
Mm-hmm.
Water, when it turns to steam, expands in volume by 1,600 times. That's a lot. It just suddenly, you know, like all the molecules need to get away from each other. Looking at that tipping top of the South Tower, the solid material looked like it was undergoing some analogous process to that. I never heard of such a process, but that's what it looked like. Like every molecule had to get away from its neighbor. It wasn't a point explosion. It was just like suddenly the material was just spreading out. And so I started doing some searching around on that, and I read something about the Casimir force, which is the force that at a very on a molecular level or an atomic level causes things to attract. Well, what happens if you flip that? Turns out scientists indeed have. They can reverse that, which causes things to come apart. And I found this article on John Hutchison's website, on his blog, and I started looking at the pictures on his blog, and my jaw dropped. Oh my gosh, he has reproduced every single one of the phenomena that I'd seen at the World Trade Center.
Well, a little background before we move farther with this. Who exactly is John Hutchison, Doctor?
He's a private individual in Canada who enjoys working with old vacuum tube equipment to reproduce many of the experiments that Nikola Tesla had done. Just out of, you know, curiosity, something to do, something interesting. And in doing so, he discovered this whole host of phenomena that then was named the Hutchison effect. Like levitation, material coming apart, disintegrating, you know, stuff bending. Like he's got videos of the steel bar that looks like it's doing sit-ups.
Yeah, I'm looking at these pictures. So what exactly, can you explain to us what the Hutchison effect is?
He uses, at first I think it was a Tesla coil, then it was a Van de Graaff generator to make a static field.
Okay.
And then interferes radio frequency signals, microwaves, and so forth within that field. He does it by feel and by intuition, and is very good at it that way. But different things happen at different times, like either levitation or the material comes apart. You get lift or disruption. Oh my gosh, I realized the toasted cars, well, I call it toasted, I mean they're history, they're toast.
They're toast, right.
Mm-hmm. We don't know what happened to them. They look burnt, but I'm not going to make that assumption.
Right.
Just something happened to them. But the ones that are upside down look like they're in pristine condition.
They're just turned upside down.
Yeah. Lift or disruption.
Right, okay. Now, I watched one of the videos concerning he had the can of Red Bull in that in his little experimental setup there. And you watch this thing dance around, stand up, float.
It takes a bow.
It takes a bow, yeah.
It bends at the waist.
Yeah, blows a hole in the can, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
And this was all done with intense RF energy.
Yeah, and in within this other field.
Right.
Now, something else that I stumbled upon in looking at things, I went through this phase of analyzing the fumes coming up from the ground. You know, the dust breaks down, then it starts floating up, goes up, looks like it's headed into the upper atmosphere. And I wanted to get a better image, and I went looking for weather satellite images, and oh my gosh, that looks like a hurricane right outside of New York City on 9/11.
Mm-hmm.
There is this Category 3 hurricane aimed for New York City for 4 days, making a beeline towards New York City, and it pulls up and stops right outside of town, like it pulled up to a chalk line, 8 a.m., reporting for duty on the morning of 9/11. And then that afternoon, made a 110-degree turn and headed out, you know, the other direction, headed out into the Atlantic. The outer bands of the hurricane were covering the end of Long Island and were over Cape Cod. That's okay. How close it was.
Okay.
Now, one thing we know from weather systems, especially those with arthritis, they can feel a storm coming. You've heard people talk about...
Oh, yeah, sure. My father had arthritis, and he knew when it was going to rain. Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
Because of a change in something in the atmosphere. this an electrical field.
Right. This is not simply a drop in barometric pressure, is what you're saying.
Right.
Okay.
A type of field effect that occurs ahead of the storm or outside of the storm. So if you get a hurricane that with a certain amount of cloud cover at some distance beyond that, like a couple of hundred miles, if you draw a bigger circle, within that you would expect to have field effects.
Mm-hmm.
Lo and behold, at the airports surrounding Manhattan, you have Newark Airport, LaGuardia, and JFK. All three of those airports reported thunder on 9/11.
Hmm.
And we all recall it being like a clear day.
Right. That's right. It looked sunny when I remember, sure.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
These were field effects. So we have evidence of field effects.
So, so again, just hold on one second. So strong enough magnetic fields, for example, could cause the field effect, which you're saying that would literally pushed that hurricane from coming inland?
No, I'm not saying why the hurricane did what it did. I'm just saying that's what it did.
Right, right. Okay, no, see, the reason I'm asking you that is because I frankly don't recall hearing about the hurricane moving on shore in New York City. That somehow has escaped me all these years. I'm glad you brought that up. That's very interesting, though. I'm sorry?
It didn't move on shore. It was right outside of town.
Okay, but you said it managed to hit Long Island.
The outer bands of it was raining on the tip of Long Island.
Okay, gotcha.
Mm-hmm. JFK Airport had 0.69 inches reported.
Wow, okay.
Just about nothing at the other two airports. And so, it was right at the edge of it, but then it made this U-turn and... headed out of town, went up up to Canada. But before then, like when it was passing Bermuda and so forth, the caution in the Carolinas was they're worried about huge, storm surges, and it wasn't even close to shore then.
Mm-hmm.
So why weren't they concerned with Manhattan? I mean, that's like sea level. And JFK Airport is at sea level.
Yes, it is. I've taken off and landed there, and it scares the hell out of me. Okay, because the end of the runway is the water.
So
yeah.
If you get a hurricane that you think, you have this this high pressure coming from the central part of the continent moving east, and it's going to turn the hurricane around at some point.
Mm-hmm.
You don't know where, and you don't know where it's going to stall out before it does turn. For 4 days, they didn't know. If it stays there a moment too long, you're going to have horrible storm surges and are going to flood Manhattan.
Yeah, interesting. All right, well, we'll pick it up on the other side of the break, folks. Have to take 3 minutes out here to pay the bills. More with Radio X, Dr. Judy Wood, coming up in just 3 minutes. Don't go away. Final segment of Radio X, at least hour number one, here on the Oracle Broadcasting Network. Jimmy X here with you. Thank you for joining us this afternoon. My guest, Dr. Judy Wood. We're talking about her theories concerning the buildings on 9/11 crumbling to the ground, basically in dust. And we'll get into that a little more as we progress. But Doctor, before the break, and I had to admit, we were talking about this hurricane that was Hurricane Aaron, I believe, right? That was headed toward right on course to New York City. And you were saying though that for some reason on that morning when that was headed there, there weren't any alerts issued to the public. Is that what you're telling us?
Right, it wasn't much noise made about it. As a matter of fact, the morning weather, NBC and CBS, I have screenshots of both of those when they show the big continent weather map. They show that area of the Atlantic Ocean, but they don't show a hurricane there. Where's the big pinwheel they put there?
And I know the procedure, and I'm sure you're aware of it. Everyone who's listened to the radio ever hears those tones that come over once in a while, the emergency alert system tone. We are sometimes asked to set those off to let people know that there's bad weather coming just for a thunderstorm.
Right.
You know what I'm saying here, right? So, I mean, I would think a hurricane would cause some a great deal of panic, and that would be all over the radio and TV all morning long.
Especially if it's going to stall out and stop. Because of it's going to be running into a high pressure front, and they don't know. You don't know exactly unless you can control the weather. You don't know exactly what it's going to do and when.
But if you control the weather, then you do know, don't you?
Right. Then you don't. Then you know you're going to get it out of town just in the nick of time, so you don't have huge storm surges that flood all of Lower Manhattan where people cannot evacuate in time.
There's no way you'd get all those people out of there.
Right.
Absolutely no way. Right.
Yeah, this Hurricane Bill that in August looked like it might be duplicating the path, a bunch of people in New York City got their car rentals, make sure they had theirs in time before, there was a run on them, and they had to figure out a way to escape.
Mm-hmm.
Just in case.
Right. Were you ever able, though, to get any information from, say, the National Weather Service concerning this after the fact, or is that impossible to go back to?
I have various weather reports. It's also, it was mentioned on the back page somewhere of CNN, where it, you know, past Bermuda, but it's headed out to sea. It's going northwest of Bermuda, headed out to sea, never to be seen again. Wait, headed out to sea? Northwest of Bermuda, that's New York City. But they were playing it down. You know, not to be a problem again. It's heading northwest out to sea from Bermuda. Well, northwest is a direct line to New York City.
Right, right.
And for 4 days, it went in a perfectly straight line towards New York City.
Hmm.
It's not the case of it coming ashore. It's the case of it stalling out and creating storm surges, which would flood all of lower Manhattan. As it is, the World Trade Center is built like 70 feet below sea level.
Yes.
The foundation is. So, you know, the value of looking at just the data, letting the data speak, you discover new things. So, okay, this hurricane, and why didn't they tell us about it? That sticks in your mind. Is it just coincidence or what? And then you start thinking about what hurricanes do. And that's when I discovered the field effects. Well, let's look at what the structure of a hurricane is. It spins round and round. You know, it's got this stem going up, the big flat plate on the top. Are you familiar with how hurricanes look?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. Mm-hmm. That's just like the wire wrappings in a Tesla coil.
Hmm.
You know, it was Tesla coil, round, 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 and seawater, salt water, whatever, is very good at conducting. So you're going to have a charge difference between the top and the ground where you're going to get lightning connecting over, and sure enough, there was. So you have this static field like a supersized Tesla coil. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah, that is very interesting.
Let's look at what we know about hurricanes and tornadoes. They're sort of similar. They go round, round, round. They have a stem. Then we see pictures of cars. You know, you've heard of cars sitting on fences or on trees or telephone poles?
Well, sure.
You know, after a tornado or hurricane passes?
Sure, because they're picked up and thrown, right.
We're told it's picked up in a vacuum, like a big vacuum cleaner,
mm-hmm.
and then dropped.
Mm-hmm.
You look at it more carefully, and it's something else going on there, I believe. It's levitation. The reverse kind of gravity. And there's a picture I have of this car that's sitting on a wooden fence. It doesn't have a scratch on the car or the fence. It had to go underneath a house roof in order to sit there. It did not tumble to that place. It was just gradually eased down, set down. You know, like a car sitting on a telephone pole. And we hear about other things, and you start going, wait a minute. You remember, you hear about straw going through trees or through other things in tornadoes and in hurricanes?
Mm-hmm.
Well, we know that straw can't go through a solid object with regular force. It gets busted up first. But wait a minute. John Hutchison confused dissimilar materials together because in this particular kind of field, interference of fields, it releases the molecular bonds. I think of it like musical chairs where all the molecules kind of let go and get up and walk around, mm-hmm. and then they kind of sit down when the music stops. And sometimes there's not enough chairs and somebody gets left out. So, while it's in the state of softening, straw can go through solid objects. And there's actually been some work done on that. The research paper on my website from a Russian guy who actually had come up with that. He's also got a pretty wide collection of straw and trees.
Okay.
But this is a particular effect of interfering different kinds of energy forms. So what I call a directed energy weapon, it's energy that's directed and is used as a weapon.
Right. Now, you said at the beginning of the program that you didn't even know those existed. And frankly, until just a few years ago, I had neither. Who do you suppose would have access to these weapons? Who do you think has them, or who do you think is utilizing them, or was utilizing them?
I think a variety of individuals, groups, and countries have them.
So you think this was, now, okay, so let me pin you down on this. You think that this was specifically, say, the United States military? Was it maybe a private corporation working on their behalf?
I mean,
obviously.
I have no idea, that's not what I get into.
Okay.
I don't know, who said what to whom when, I call it a he said, she said, who said, what said. I just look at the physical evidence. And for those who think that, okay, yeah, the U.S. covered it up, NIST covered it up, they would have a good reason to cover it up if they didn't do it. Because if let's say they don't have such a weapon, would they want to announce it to the world?
If they don't have the weapon?
Yeah, let's say they don't have such a weapon.
And okay.
They knew, anybody who's familiar with this technology would be able to identify that.
Okay.
That's what happened. Would they want to announce that to the world that we got ahead and we don't even have a way to defend ourselves?
Oh, I see what you're saying. Sure, no, of course. Well, no, that's true. They wouldn't do that either. But, of course, on the flip side, if they did have it and use it, they're still going to deny that they
right.
have anything
so,
to use
so
it.
The fact that they're denying it doesn't prove anything one way or the other.
Well, no, of course not. But that's the problem, though, isn't it, with all of these theories put forth on this? There's deniability on all levels from everybody, okay? And therefore, you can't pin anybody down, no matter what
except,
you believe.
Except, I have a legal case, a federal case that's still pending, with the contractors who helped on this report, because that can be pinned on them. They knowingly, they're developers and manufacturers of, guess what, directed energy weapons. And they assisted NIST with the report. They knew what they were looking at. And I call it willful blindness. They, look
wow.
the other way.
Yes, yeah, exactly. All right, well, Doctor, we have to take the top of the hour break. We'll get hour two underway in just a couple of moments. And folks, when we get back, we'll open up the phone lines for your comments or questions for Dr. Judy Wood on the show. You can reach us at 512-904-8014 or toll free from wherever you happen to be, 1-866-841-1065. Stay tuned. Hour number two, Radio X on the way.
You are now listening to the Oracle Broadcasting Network, the home of cutting-edge talk radio.
All right, folks, it is hour number two of Radio X for this Sunday afternoon, October the 11th, 2009. I'm your host, Jimmy X. Thank you for joining me on the broadcast. My guest, Dr. Judy Wood. I'd like you to check out her website, drjudywood.com, 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 if you'd like more information on what we're talking about today. And we're talking about what Dr. Wood has taken as some theories concerning what she believes might have happened on September 11th, 2001. She's certainly not believing the conventional wisdom as put forth by the mainstream media and by our federal government. Absolutely not. And we've been talking about some of the goings-on, including the weather that day and some other periphery. But I want to, Dr. Wood, I want to start getting into some of the things that we do know happened, and I'd like you to give us your explanation. I noticed on your website you have the principal data list that you say must be explained. Mm-hmm. Now, we already in hour number one talked about how fast the buildings came down, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And you're saying, of course, that really virtually impossible under their own weight if they were blown up or imploded or whatever the case was.
And the seismic signal does not reflect any building slamming to the ground. Also, the protective bathtub, because the towers were built under sea level.
Right.
and they had this kind of concrete liner that held the water out, held the Hudson River out. That didn't get broken. It didn't spring a leak.
No, actually, it looks like it was completely unscathed.
Yeah, isn't that amazing? But when they brought in earth-moving equipment right afterwards to help with the cleanup, the earth-moving equipment damaged the bathtub wall.
Mm-hmm.
Yet two 500,000-ton buildings crashing down did not.
Well, that in of itself would be enough to at least go to the next step, I suppose, right, as far as investigating this.
Yeah.
I mean, that alone. You know, can we go back to something real quick? You were talking before we went to the top of the hour about the defense contractors. You were saying, obviously, you believe that they obviously clearly knew what they were looking at when they were there. Is there any update on any of that at this point? I mean, do we know anything else about what those gentlemen or whoever happened to see? Have any of them said anything publicly?
Well, it's an ongoing case, so I'm not, you know, free to talk about it. And they, you know, one thing we can assume as part of my documents, which are in the public domain,
okay.
You can download them on my website. In my initial complaints, I presented that this one particular company, Applied Research Associates (ARA), had a government contract where they were paid to know everything about any weapon of mass destruction that existed or will exist on the planet.
Okay.
In other words, they were paid to know what weapons are out there.
Right.
And their capabilities. So, therefore, you know, they would recognize what happened. They test the effects of various weapons in their test facilities in various places in the country.
Okay.
So, if it isn't their weapon, they would know whose it was, probably.
Okay. All right. So, again, all that information is on your website. More information about it concerning
the
rundown.
Yeah, the court case, the Kim case.
Very good. All right. Well, we're going to be going to a break here in a moment. When we get back, I want to talk about what exactly happened to the buildings themselves. And again, folks, if you'd like to chime in on the conversation today, please feel free to do so. Questions, comments are welcome. You can reach us at 512-904-8014, 512-904-8014. Toll free, you can reach us 1-866-841-1065, 866-841-1065. Radio X continues in 3 minutes. Stay tuned. All right, folks, welcome back. You are listening to Radio X here on the Oracle Broadcasting Network. I'm Jimmy X. My guest, Dr. Judy Wood, we're talking about is investigating concerning the devastation around September 11th, 2001. If you'd like to join the conversation, again, the telephone numbers, we can be reached at 512-904-8014, toll-free 1-866-841-1065. Well, Doctor, I'd like to take a look at this. You have this rather comprehensive list on your website of data that you say needs to be explained. We've, again, already talked about how fast the buildings came down, so let's look at some more details here. Now, you're saying that the buildings, of course, as we're looking at the videos and the photos on your website, it does appear to be clear to me. You say that they underwent midair pulverization, were turned to dust before they hit the ground. Again, what could possibly cause cement to turn to dust?
Oh, we're not talking about cement. We're talking about steel structures. These were steel structures.
Mm-hmm.
You can't build real tall, high-rise buildings out of concrete because the concrete's too heavy for the strength.
Right, so you need to have it reinforced by the steel, what you were calling the Wechecks.
No, this isn't reinforced. Primary structure has to be steel.
It has to be steel, right, okay.
Because in order to get a building that's tall, weight is real important up near the top.
Okay.
And so, you know, the whole way up. So you can't have, you know, for short buildings, concrete's fine because it's you can overbuild it close to the ground, but for its weight, the strength to weight ratio of concrete is not as good as steel by far.
Okay.
So yeah, it's a steel building. The whole outer walls of the building were part of the structure. The inner core was the other part, and the floors were bolted between the inside and the outside.
Okay.
So you have all this miles and miles of steel. Where'd it go?
Well, it appears to have pulverized into thin air.
Yeah, it's that line from the musical Camelot. about the leaves, you know, autumn leaves fall into neat little piles. And mm-hmm. No, they blow away at night. Yeah, gone. And that's what it looks like these buildings did. They look like they fell in neat little piles and they blew away in the wind.
Well, you point out that, you know, of course, we all witnessed it, most of us did, that they were destroyed from the top down. I think the explanation with regards to that question officially was, airplanes did it. I don't believe that you think that that's accurate.
They really weren't destroyed from the top down. The visual appearance came part from the top down.
Well, that's what it appears. That's what I'm saying. Yeah, if you watch it, it looks like the building collapsed or actually went from the top right down.
I believe throughout the hour, you know, the hour for the South Tower and the hour and a half for the North Tower, the building was being dissolved. So it wasn't an instantaneous thing. I think it was, you know, ongoing. The building was being, sort of weak and dustified and wilted and with a weird type of energy field within it.
Okay.
And Building 7 is the best example. We recall all this stuff pouring out of one face of the building all afternoon.
Right.
I'm not going to call it smoke. Let's call it fumes, a generic term.
Okay.
So we don't, you know, automatically think fire. That's an awful lot of material that came out of that building all day long.
Yeah, where'd it go?
Downwind. Yeah. Then at 5:20, when the building went poof, you know, its final demise, there wasn't enough material left to slam to the ground. You know the seismic signal for that building's demise?
I was going to ask you that next. What should it have been?
It was 6 times greater potential energy than the Seattle Kingdom, which was a 2.3.
Okay.
On the Richter scale.
2.3, okay. Mm-hmm.
That was the Seattle Kingdom. Building 7 was 0.6. That's like a jackhammer.
And, of course, the seismic scale is not a linear scale, right?
Right.
So obviously, it's logarithmic, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Correct.
So 2.6 is how many times greater than 0.6?
Many times.
Yeah, I mean hundreds and hundreds, right?
Yeah. And 0.6 is like a jackhammer on the sidewalk.
Right, which is virtually nothing.
Right.
Right.
A dump truck should make more than that going down the street. Speaking of dump trucks, mm-hmm. in my comments to NIST, that was my comment. I said it should be like raining dump trucks. You have 230 approximately 1,000 tons of material in Building 7. Each floor is the size of a football field. There's thousands of dump trucks, big 10-ton dump trucks, crashing to the ground, yet it was whisper quiet. Houston, we have a problem.
Hmm. Well, one of the things you pointed out, too, that I find this interesting, I have to ask you this. You said none of the toilets survived or even recognizable portions of one. I mean, what is with the porcelain objects with regards to all of this?
And the WFC buildings across the street, the marble facade all went away.
Yeah, but the rest of the building was basically unscathed,
right,
as well. So what does that tell you?
There's whatever the energy, type of energy it was, it affects different materials differently. As we all know, there was just lots of unburned paper blown all over Manhattan.
Mm-hmm.
Paper wasn't affected. It wasn't affected much. It wasn't affected by this energy, but it was probably affected by things coming apart all around it.
Right. Well, what would be different, though, about porcelain? I mean, I guess that's my question. How does that fit in? I mean, I guess I don't understand what the notion here.
It might crumble.
Mm-hmm.
There's different types of kind of bonds and so forth in them, different piezoelectric properties of different materials.
Mm-hmm.
Each material is an issue, but it's also very brittle.
Yes, of course, right.
And, you know, you start looking at the data and see what the data tells you. And I think that needs to be done more than it has been, because it's how you learn new things.
Right.
If you stay within your repertoire of understanding, like knowing about firecrackers, BB guns, and slingshots, then you don't see what really happened. But you don't need to know about the weapon in order to conclude it.
Okay.
Like, for me, I just knowing physical principles, it became evident that that's what had to create it. It has to be an energy weapon. The biggest aha moment for that was this toasted car under FDR Drive over on the East River. That's a half mile away at least. It looks toasted on one side, yet it has a circular spot in the middle of the door, or the back side, back of the door, that doesn't look toasted. Mm-hmm. 1 nanometer over, it's toasted. 1 nanometer to the right, it's new wax job.
Hmm.
Well, buyers don't do that.
Okay, that's okay. Now, very quickly, someone in the chat room wanted to ask if you had any idea. We were talking about the seismic numbers with regard to that building coming down, and you compared it to the Seattle Dome. Seattle Kingdom, right. Do you have any idea what theoretically might have been the seismic numbers had that building just collapsed?
In the Twin Towers?
Yes.
Oh, probably 6 or 7 together.
Okay. All right. Very good. All right, Doctor. We're going to take a break. We'll be back. We have Russ on the line. Hang on, Russ. We'll get to you when we get back. You're listening to Radio X here on the Oracle Broadcasting Network. Stay with us, folks. All right, folks, welcome back. You are listening to Radio X here on the Oracle Broadcasting Network. Jimmy X here, my guest on the program, Dr. Judy Wood. And we're going to continue with her observations concerning 9/11. First, we have a caller on the line. It looks like it's Russ in an undisclosed location. Russ, what's on your mind today?
Jimmy X.
How are you, sir?
It's an awesome day, and I'm wonderful, thank you, and you're sounding great as always. And I just have to say, you know, leave it to a lady to bring us the truth. I think it's just awesome. Dr. Judy, it's a blessing to get to listen to you. I had to chime in. So many questions that you answer in this and point out the answers to it. Where did the pile of rubble go? And I know I watched those buildings fall that morning, and the first time that I heard the possibility of this was on March 2nd on Truth Brigade Radio. A young man named Alex brought up Skellar weapons and raised the possibility that that's what happened. And I'm looking at your webpage and the research and putting it together with, like you said, my ears shut everything out because it didn't match what I saw. And I saw that morning, that day, something vibrate those buildings and then they disappeared, as you say. So I just wanted to chime in and say that I believe that you are the one with the answer, and I just hope that you have success in getting the truth out there.
Thanks. Thank you very much. And I'm glad there are people out there who can think through this problem and aren't just like memorizing and going along with the bandwagon, but actually thinking and seeing and saying, yeah, wait a minute. Yeah, we all have that ability to see with our eyes. Great.
So, Russ, did you have a question for the doctor today?
I just had to chime in and lift up the lady and get on the record of saying that I mean, I may be a nobody, but I got no degrees, but I know that what I'm listening to is describing what I saw that day. And then when you factor in all the things that are missing, the hurricane, the fact that there's footage out there that shows no airplanes, in the time sequence they gave it to us, we really need to open up our eyes and see what kind of scam is being played on us. And 9/11 is an awesome tool to do that. And she's covered all the questions. They're obvious. I mean, I could just go on, and I don't want to. I want to listen to Dr. Judy. I just felt compelled to take a minute to lift up the lady. And thank you, Jimmy, for the job you're doing.
No problem. Thank you, Russ. I appreciate you listening. And
thank you so much.
Yeah, really. No, listen, no one who listens to this network, nobody who thinks outside the box is a nobody. Everybody matters, okay? And it's getting everybody together, Doctor, to fight for what we believe is what's right and just. I mean, I think that's the whole point of an alternative network like Oracle, is to get people together and get everybody collectively thinking, at least. If nothing else, get them thinking, get out there and see if you can find the truth in these matters. And this one has still been something that's stuck in my craw after all these years. Obviously, I'm not the only one.
Right. And as I said in the talk I gave a couple of years ago, I began saying, nothing is more important than for us each, every one of us, to think for ourselves, because not doing so is how we got to where we are. 9/11 wouldn't have happened if we were all independent thinkers. It wouldn't have worked, and it wouldn't have been pulled off.
Sure, but the obviously the forces that be, the powers that be, don't want independent thinkers.
Exactly. So thinking independently is the best way of combating it.
Right. Absolutely. 512-904-8014, our telephone number. You can reach us toll-free, 1-866-841-1065. Any questions or comments for Dr. Judy Wood, my guest on the broadcast today? Now, Judy, I want to go on and talk about the peripheral damage outside of the actual towers for a few minutes. I found this fascinating, and I'm looking at the pictures on your website. We're looking at police cars that have what appear to be odd-looking damage. Could you give us a description of these cars? I mean, what are we looking at here?
Which ones? You're on the Cliff Notes page.
I'm on the Cliff. I'm on the Cliff Notes page right now. But I've looked at the other the pictures on the other on the full blown site, if you will, as
okay.
well. But I'm looking like right now at the police cars, for example.
Yeah, the figure 40B is that one called the wax spot car. The left side of the car on the back door has this round spot.
Yes, it does.
It looks like a template was held over it, like a, you know, in a photographic exposure. When you started thinking of that, think about that concept. You don't put an image on a piece of paper by burning light onto it. What you do is trigger a chemical reaction in the photographic emulsion and expose it to light, and light is just the directional control. And I think it's that kind of principle that happened that day. You have an overall, like, static field, and then you have a directional part that interferes with it, that triggers it.
Mm-hmm.
So we have, you know, like, figure 40A, the right side of that police car, where the front door is just totally toast. It's gone, you know, it's history. The back looks like it's completely brand new, pristine condition, new wax job. And it abruptly stops at that door.
Hmm.
Yeah, I'm wondering if there's a rubber seal between the front and back door. You know, something that kept a charge from going through. The inside of that car is in figure 41. The hump that goes over the drive shaft.
Right. The drive shaft from the transmission. Right.
Look at the little holes in it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like Swiss cheese, little pinholes in it. The metal's just been eaten through.
Well,
why
except,
would that happen inside a car?
And I find it's very interesting you ask what happened to the fire extinguisher. The fire extinguisher appears to be perfectly intact.
Yeah, that could have been tossed in there later.
That's true. It could have been.
Oh, that reminds me of
yes.
something. You know, a lot of folks say, well, we heard a bang, you know, in the building. Well, you didn't hear like what you hear for controlled demolition. You know, those hear pop, 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 and then the building starts moving. But what was reported by quite a few eyewitnesses is that the Scott tanks, that's the oxygen or air tanks that the firefighters wear.
That's right, that they have on their backs as they're moving around, right.
Those at ground level, extra ones sitting in the fire truck and so forth, were exploding on 9/11.
Now, what would cause those tanks to explode?
Think about it, if you're dissolving the metal or weakening the metal.
If you weaken the metal, sure, then the pressure from the tank will blow it out. Right, okay.
Mm-hmm. Now, add that concept to various other pressure tanks throughout the building. You have air tanks, like for pressurized air supply for flushing toilets. I call them turbo toilets.
That's right.
And you have water tanks.
Mm-hmm.
And it could even be water tanks that were squirting out that we saw. You know, those what people were calling squibs, but I call them squirts of something, squirts of lather, squirts of water or something. But there's reasons why you would have various pressurized tanks exploding without needing to worry about dynamite in them.
Mm-hmm.
So that extinguisher reminded me of that. This picture 42 on the Cliff Notes page, that's West Broadway looking sort of north, and Building 7 is behind us. West Broadway goes past Building 7 on north for about four blocks. Every single car was toasted, but no trees, no buildings, No bodies were toasted. No paper on the sidewalk was toasted.
Just the metal cars.
Just the vehicles.
And what is this? I find this interesting. You say they have missing door handles. How can one explain that?
Well, it's a particular type of material they're made out of that this thing likes to eat.
Okay.
And right. As well as engines. But it also in 42, if you notice the windshield edges or the seat for it.
Yes. Well, Doctor, let's hold on to that for 1 second. Okay, we have to take the bottom of the hour break. We'll pick it up there with these burned out cars. And what Dr. Wood seems to think might have happened with these cars. Very interesting. All right, we'll be back with more Radio X in just a few minutes, folks. Stay tuned.
Well, here we are in the final half hour. Hour number two, Radio X here on the Oracle Broadcasting Network. We're talking with Dr. Judy Wood today about the goings-on from September 11th, 2001. And, Doctor, before we went to break, you were discussing some of the peripheral damage, and we were talking specifically about the cars and the damage to the cars. And we're looking at the pictures here on the website. I hope you at home listening will do the same. Log on to drjudywood.com. That's drjudywood.com. And take a look for yourself. Now, we were looking at figure 42. You're showing us cars that are all burned out. With the windows. Are the windows missing in some of these as well?
Completely,
right? The windows are completely gone. And the cars are what appear to be burned, but again, you're saying this is not from heat.
Not necessarily. And the reason why I use my unique language is to avoid any kind of biasing observations. If I said they're burnt, you automatically assume fire.
Of course you do, sure.
But seeing toasted and just using a generic term, yeah, something happened to them. We don't need to commit to actually what happened, but comparing these to regular car fires, and you know, my detractors often say, well, it's just a regular car fire. No, I can tell the difference. And this particular car in figure 42, the window seat inside the windshield,
mm-hmm.
Notice there's no insulation, no remnants of the windshield left.
That's right.
It looks like it's been sandblasted and prepared for a new paint job.
No, that's right. You're talking there isn't any glass left at all, period.
Nowhere.
That's right. No, I'm looking right at the picture. Now, again, I mean, you know, again, call me crazy, but what could possibly explain the absence of everything regarding the windshield? I mean, obviously, we know if a car fire, even if the window gets smashed, everything else remains intact.
The corner is left and a little scrap on the edges.
Sure, you'll find it because it's laminated glass anyway. It tends not to disappear.
Another thing you see in this picture is the van in the middle of the street has its sliding door popped open. And in the distance, you see a vehicle with its trunk lid popped open.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
That was a theme. Also, that police car, the trunk lid's popped open.
Right. That's right. We go back to the police car photos. The trunk's open. That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. I believe that this, whatever it is, field tends to dissolve that material that the latches are made out of.
Now, how do you explain the rust, though? I see in many photos that you talk about rust on not only just in the cars, but other metal objects that had rust. I mean, we all, I think, know that it takes rust a long time to develop. How could it have taken a day?
Have you ever used an iron skillet and left it in the sink to soak, especially after you scrubbed it some? It turns bright orange.
Okay.
It rusts. Pure iron rusts. That's why they don't make buildings out of iron. They make them out of steel because these other bits and doodads added in greatly improved the properties.
Okay.
The anti-rust properties as well as the strength properties of steel.
Mm-hmm.
So why would they rust like iron? Remember my analogy to musical chairs?
Yes.
The music stops and you know all the molecules have to find a chair and then somebody gets left out. How about if the carbon and other, you know, components of the steel get left out, and so you have pure iron left on the surface.
Okay. Yeah, well, there's an interesting theory. Okay, because obviously there is some iron in the making of steel.
Right. Right. It's mainly iron, but with these other components, it greatly reduces its ability to rust.
Right.
But after it's been affected, and the surface has, you know, the molecules have let go of each other, when they reattach, you know, somebody's left out there.
Hmm.
And remember, we're looking at just what's left. We don't see what went away in the wind.
Right, and nor will we probably ever.
Right. So what we're seeing is sort of the edge of the affected material. It's the last of it that remains. which is why you would get the outside of steel looking like half eaten.
Now, did anyone after the fact now go and look at these vehicles and assess what they thought was the damage? Was any reports issued with regard to what this devastation with the automobiles say in the area?
No. But it struck me that while you have 1,400 vehicles, where there was enough left to count them as a vehicle,
mm-hmm.
that were destroyed that day.
They were all hauled away.
Yeah, and how many can fit around the Trade Center complex?
Well, I don't know. How many can?
Yeah. How many can you fit on VC Street? I didn't see too many on West Street. There's a couple of fire trucks, a bunch of fire trucks and emergency vehicles.
Mm-hmm.
There's an interesting eyewitness testimony about a fellow who dove under an emergency vehicle when one of the towers was going poof, and he thought he was trapped when, how the sky turns dark because of all the dust. When the sky lightened up, the vehicle wasn't over him anymore. It was gone. I thought that was interesting.
And this man went on record saying that. Okay.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well,
there's several ones that say
several.
That.
Yes, I've seen some of the quotes you have on the website. So people were telling their tales. And again, I don't remember ever hearing any of these tales being told on the mainstream media, for example.
Oh no, including the issue with the jumpers. They don't talk about that either.
Which jumpers are you referring to?
The people who went out the window.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, the people who jumped out the window.
I don't know if they necessarily jumped. I won't make that conclusion.
Okay.
But they look like people, and they went out windows, and some of them disintegrated on the way down before they hit the ground. That's something that doesn't get talked about either. The one that really taught me something, my hat goes off to this fellow, from the 105th floor. He has his shirt off. He's outside, hanging outside the building by a finger and a toe, and taking his pants off. Think of all the reasons why someone would want to hang outside of the 105th floor and take their pants off. If there's fire inside, you need, your clothing is a protection against the fire. If you're inside, and, if I'm inside and there's a fire, what I'm going to do is head to the bathroom while there's still water, soak myself down, get some wet clothing and wrap it around my head and then make a run for it. I'm wet.
Okay.
If the fire sprinklers go off, you're wet. If the fire sprinklers don't go off and it's hot, you're sweating and you're wet. Just about any way you look at it, you're wet. What happens to, let's say, for example, water in a microwave? Microwave oven.
Right. Okay. What, it boils.
If you have a paper towel, dry paper towel, it isn't affected, but if it's wet, it is.
Okay.
There's these active denial systems for crowd control where they use microwaves on people. It's said that if the people are wet or their clothing is wet, it's, many, many times worse.
Okay, I follow you.
So I'm thinking, okay, if there's some weird energy field inside the building, I'm not saying necessarily microwave, but something going on in the building, that would explain why someone was hanging by a finger and a toe outside the 105th floor taking their pants off. I can't think of any other explanation. If it's smoke, well, you hold your breath, you step inside the window, take your pants off, and then step back out if you have some weird need to take your pants off.
Right.
You don't do it outside the building. Hanging outside the building, taking pants off. As you see other people hang out the windows, and they have, lots of them have their shirts off, other ones have their pants off. There's a picture of one of the, quote, jumpers who's got their pants, trailing. Around their ankle or something. There's something else going on there than, quote, jumping. And even of the jumpers, the media didn't talk about those. They led people to believe there was 5 or 10.
Right.
from eyewitness testimony, there is three or four per face of the North Tower per minute. Quick calculation, let's say three per face.
Okay.
So that's, you know, three times four sides, that's 12 per minute. Times 100 minutes, that's 1,200 people. And then, you know, first floor or two, there's 343 firefighters who were killed. Add those on to it. Now we're up to, you know, 1,500 and some.
Okay.
You know how many, how much DNA was identified?
How much?
I think it's 1,500 and some odd different people.
Okay. But there were still another, how many in the building?
There's at least 1,000.
Okay.
So the jumpers account for the DNA that was identified.
The people in the building did not. Is that what you're saying?
Right. The numbers.
The numbers, right.
Right.
Exactly. All right. We have to take the final break of the program, folks. Feel free to join the conversation. One segment left. 512-904-8014. Toll free, 1-866-841-1065. Dr. Judy Woods, my guest. Back for the final segment in 3 minutes. Don't go away.
All right, final segment of Radio X for this Sunday afternoon.
Talking with Dr. Judy Wood today about 9/11 and her take on the events that happened that day, September 11, 2001. And if you'd like to chime in, this is going to be your last opportunity, my friends. Toll free. Reach us at 1-866-841-1065. 866-841-1065 or the local Austin area, 512-904-8014. We're talking about some of the peripheral damage to cars. We just got through talking about the people who were hanging out the windows and things like that. And to wrap it up today, I want to talk about a couple other things. You pointed out, and I find this, again, very fascinating, the windows on the building surrounding the Twin Towers. What do you see there, Dr. Judy?
Round holes, which is something you see with longitudinal waves. I like to describe it as dropping a pebble in a pond, and ripples go outwards. In other words, a vertical drop of a stone causes a displacement of the water that sends ripples outwards.
Mm-hmm.
So if you put something onto glass, in a particular type of energy wave, it can ripple outwards, and I think it would make the circular pattern of hole.
Okay. Now, you point out here that some of the windows that had double panes, an inner and an outer pane, most of the inner panes, although the outer one was broken in some manner, the inner one was intact.
Yeah, there's some of that. I need to put some of those pictures up that I've gotten recently. They're quite intriguing. And the building across the street from them, which was one of the WGC buildings, is just gone, disappeared.
Mm-hmm.
Went AWOL.
Yeah, okay, so... Again, what can we postulate about that?
What I think is, what's my take on it?
Yes.
This was the demonstration of a new technology, actually an old technology that is now being demonstrated. It's Tesla technology, but it was a demonstration on 9/11, a demonstration that nobody could miss. We have a choice. And that's what I would like listeners to know. It can be used for evil, but can also be used for good. Tesla didn't want to bring it out 100 years ago because he was afraid it would be used for evil. If it was used for good, it would be misused. Well, if it's already being used for evil, then there's no risk in using it for good. So we can use it to provide free energy for all. It's a type of free energy. It's different than being tied to oil and electricity and coal and so forth. But he who controls the energy controls the population.
Right.
So the controllers might not want to give that up.
Okay. Well, I'm assuming you understand how the technology works. If you were to, are you able to explain to us a bit on how this all works?
Not in 3 minutes.
No, not in three. Yeah, I thought maybe you can give us a little synopsis. Actually, we have about five, but I don't know if that'll be any more helpful.
Something that folks might find useful, go to thehutchisoneffect.com. John Hutchison's new website. Pirates took over the other one and put fake videos and stuff, weird stuff on it. But he has a new website. It's thehutchisoneffect.com. And there are videos on there that are very instructive. And you can see how, you know, different kinds of equipment and different types of interferences, different effects are created.
Mm-hmm. And, of course, he's obviously will have some explanations on his website concerning this phenomena.
Yes. He doesn't do a whole lot of... Andrew Johnson manages the site. He doesn't do a whole lot of writing stuff down himself.
Okay.
But, you know, give him some equipment. He'll show you. He'll show anybody who wants to see it. The, you know, a very sharing type person. It's really nice. He would like to share this technology with the world.
Now, you know, when we were talking about the windows just a couple of moments ago, you also mentioned, though, about the marble facade on one of the building. The rest of the building's intact. The marble facade is missing.
On which?
The building you said it was across the street.
There's the WFC buildings around
yes.
the doorway. All the marble's missing.
All the marble's missing, but the rest of the building is intact.
Yes.
Now, does this go back to the same material as we were talking earlier about the porcelain, for example? That
yeah. Is it marble or you know, different things happen to different materials. But some obviously entire buildings worth of materials can also go away. But where it's the edges of the affected zone.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the things that are still affected are different. Building 4, most people don't talk. Oh, building 6, we didn't discuss.
No, we didn't.
50% of the building's mass, approximately, is gone. It's just an empty hole in the middle of the building. It looks like somebody took a post hole digger and took out core samples, cylindrical cutouts, out of the inside of the building. And there was a firefighter who was standing, you know, right next to it where it happened, with some of his friends, other firefighters. His other firefighters didn't make it. He was just, you know, 1 inch over, and it made all the difference.
Hmm.
And he made it, and of course, you know, problem with survivor's guilt, because why, you know, why me surviving and, you know, the guy just to my right didn't. It's really creepy.
Well, this whole thing is creepy. I mean, when you think about it, I mean, let's face it. I mean, any kind of weapon that could cause this type of destruction has to be, if not creepy, you know, scare the hell out of you, if nothing else.
Yeah, they could use it any place, any time.
Oh, well, obviously, if they could use it theoretically on 9/11 to prove a point. We have it. We're here.
Yeah. See what we can do. Don't
see what we can
it.
Do. Sure. So we, you know, so obviously, you know, this may not be the last time. Very quickly, though, there's a couple of other things that you point out. You call these things fuzzballs. What are the fuzzballs?
They're different than fuzzy blobs. Fuzzballs is around people's feet. It's the fine dust that the coarse dust that continues to break down finer and finer.
Okay.
And it starts getting kicked up around feet. Then pretty soon you notice it starts rising on its own. And it looks like the streets are fuming, but then they immediately brought in the street cleaners, so you didn't notice that. But the lawns were then fuming, so they brought in fresh potting soil and dumped them on the lawns.
Okay, so what do you think was fuming?
Fuming, I call it fumes because, you know, is it smoke? Is it dust?
Right.
I just call it fumes as a generic term. And you know how we're told that there are fires for 99 days?
That's right.
I think that was the cover story for fuming. That was the continued breakdown of material, molecular dissociation. And as it gets finer and finer, it just wafts up on its own.
Right, and you have pictures of people walking near, appears near the fuming material, but you're saying that, of course, there was no real heat being generated because these people couldn't have gotten near it.
Right. And the you know, earth-moving equipment is a limit to how high you can operate hydraulic equipment.
Before the hydraulic system breaks down, you're talking?
Right, it's like your car engine.
Sure.
You know, it overheats and you ruin your engine.
Right, and the hydraulic system couldn't be picking up molten metal because it would destroy it. The hoses
right.
and the whole thing, right?
Yeah, and guess what another quality of the Hutchison effect is?
What's that?
Luminescence at room temperature.
Okay.
It glows. You know, everything that glows is not necessarily hot. Hot things glow, but not all things that glow are hot. consider an incandescent light versus a fluorescent light?
Well, they both glow. One's hot, one isn't.
Right. Well, these fires are sort of an equivalent, these apparent fires, these mm-hmm. weird fires are like a fluorescent light.
Right. And you mentioned, of course, too, about the street cleaning that began right away. What do you make of that?
You could always say this plausible deniability is saying, well, you know, it's all this dust, we need to clean it up. But what struck me is, why are they moving in street cleaners on day one, on that afternoon, when they should be, you know, having the street cleared for rescue vehicles? It's kind of bizarre.
Yeah, that is. Well, a lot of this is still, obviously, makes very little sense. But, Doctor, I appreciate you coming on today to kind of help us put some of this into perspective. I find what you're looking at here fascinating. And, folks, again, if you want more information, check out Dr. Judy's website. That's drjudywood.com. drjudywood.com. Doctor Wood, I really appreciate you coming on the show today. Thank you for taking time out this afternoon.
Thanks for having me.
Oh, no problem. We'll be in touch, hopefully, and maybe we can bring Dr. Judy back on one of these days again to update us if she has any more news. Folks, that's going to do it for the broadcast today. Hope you enjoyed it. I appreciate you listening. Stay tuned as Cordy Howell and Cordite Country follows on the Oracle Broadcasting Network. Talk to you next Sunday afternoon. Have a great day, folks.